haven't been the same. And we're live.
Hello, and welcome back to the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa, and with me are...
Walter Vinci.
Romano Da Silva.
How are you guys doing today?
I'm good.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right, what we like to do with the FTW podcast is find a movie that neither of us have seen, we'll watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. In this episode, we will be discussing Tell No One.
So should we like stop the podcast now? Since we're not telling anyone?
Boo. Not as good as my joke last week. But before we get into that, it's time for Yay or Nay. This is the part of the show where we discuss what each of us have recently seen on our own. Walter.
I've been doing a little nostalgia TV watching. I picked up Robotech, the Macross Saga, from the late 80s. I've been watching that episode by episode. And I have to say that the voice acting certainly doesn't hold up. And the animation certainly does. I love the way it looks.
Is it anime style?
Yeah, it was done in Japan, redubbed by Carl Masek and brought over here as Robotech.
Okay.
In America. And I remember watching it as a kid, sporadically, but it came on at a weird time right before I got home from school, so I only got to catch like usually the last 15 minutes of each episode. So a lot of it's really hazy. It just happens that today's episode is actually the episode I remember seeing most as a kid, is the episode where you first see Rick Hunter and Lisa Hayes kiss. While he's having a fever dream after being shot down. But some of the jokes I can't even say jokes, but some of the stuff that they've written into the script, not really for kids. There's a scene where one of the other characters is in a coffee shop, and she has a date with another character, and he's like, how about dinner tonight? And then he walks off, and then you hear her thoughts, like, she's like, yes, dinner tonight, and if all things go well, breakfast tomorrow. I'm like, wow, you know, as a kid, I don't remember picking up on any of this.
That's funny.
I just want to see more giant robots.
Does it deliver on giant robots?
It does. The battles are pretty cool looking. The voice acting is, I don't think it's very good at all. Actually,
I don't really remember the show. How does it compare to something, say, like Voltron or Thundercats?
I think the Macross Saga only really ran on TV for like one season, then culminated in a movie. It didn't really catch a. It's very, very niche cult following.
Right.
Even when I was a kid, like very few people actually watched it. It wasn't like Transformers or G.I. Joe or any of those other series. But I remember loving it. This one thing most people will probably remember about these was they looked like F-14 Tomcats.
Right.
The airplanes, and then they transform into robots.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which actually, and a little bit of trivia, the Transformers toy Jetfire is actually based off of the Macross model.
Hmm. Now, did this come after Transformers?
Oh, started? I don't believe so. I think it did come after Transformers.
There's a whole transforming thing.
Transformable Mecha has been around for a while
in
Japan. It wasn't until like Transformers hit here that people were really aware of it.
Okay.
But visually, like I think the animation still looks fantastic. Voice work, not so much. So I would give this one. If you've seen the series before, if you want to catch it again, like you want to go back and kind of rewatch it like I've been, I would say certainly yay. You know, I would say yay all around. Just give it a shot, especially if, younger listeners, people who, parents, who might have, kids, they won't get some of the more adult, themed sayings like the breakfast thing and stuff like that. But they'll certainly be, get a kick out of seeing like, spaceships and robots, fighting each other.
Yeah.
So I would say yay.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
That's all I got this week. Episode I've been watching.
Romana?
Watched two movies. First one I'd like to talk about is Carnage.
Carnage.
Directed by Roman Polanski.
Yes. Starring Jodie Foster, Kate Winslet, Christoph Waltz, and John C. Reilly.
Yep.
All right.
Do you have the synopsis there?
I do. It says, two pairs of parents hold a cordial meeting after their sons are involved in a fight. Though as their time together progresses, increasingly childish behavior throws the evening into chaos.
I wanted to see this.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you will after I talk about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not. It's one of those movies. It's very middle of the road. There's nothing great about it. There's nothing overly bad about it.
I think that theme will come up later on today.
It's just pretty much what the synopsis broke down. It's the two families, just the parents get together, because the son of Christoph Waltz and Kate Winslet hits the son of Jodie Foster and,
John C. Reilly
in the face with a branch one day over some kind of argument.
A branch?
Yeah, he hits him in the face with a branch. So the parents get together, want to discuss, I think, because mostly they get together mostly because of John C. Reilly and Jodie Foster. Jodie Foster plays a very kind of hippie-ish mom,
mm-hmm.
where she's all about peace and love and helping everybody in the world and stuff like that. And it starts off very civil. I mean, the movie's a character study. It's just, I honestly don't even know what the theme of this movie is could possibly be, other than people can put up a front. Like Jodie, I think it's mostly Jodie Foster's character, where people can put up a front like, hey, you know, I'm all peace and love and helping everyone. But when you're pushed, like your real person will always come out. The real, like, animalistic human nature mm-hmm. always triumphs.
Yep.
And I think that's kind of the point of the movie, is that it starts off very civil, and then as the evening goes on, they just progressively get a little more snappy. They get on each other's nerves. It almost gets a little physical between, not with, opposing spouses, but, like, you know, Jodie Foster will, you know, push John C. Reilly because he says something she doesn't like. Mm-hmm. And it's a total character study movie. I mean, there's nothing to it. It ends very abruptly. I don't feel like anything is resolved by the end of the movie. I didn't really care about any of the characters. It's just very, it's kind of like you're a fly in the wall. You're watching two sets of people discuss their children.
Yeah.
And then they constantly go off topic. I'll say meh.
No, this is based off of a play called God of Carnage by French playwright Yasmina Reza. Could you tell that it was based off of a play, or was it filmed that way?
It was. It's all in one location, so yeah, you could definitely tell that it was based on a play, because they're in their Jodie Foster and John C. Reilly's apartment the entire movie. It's one room.
Kind of similar to Rope then, huh?
Yeah, but not like all one take, right, obviously. Right. Like, there were a few long takes, but nothing spectacular. Nothing to, like, you know, get all up in arms about. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd say meh. It's middle of the road. I mean, it's well acted. Honestly, like, there's nothing that would stick out in this movie as like, oh my god, Roman Polanski, only he could do that.
Right.
It's very, you know, just I'd say almost mediocre. Like, directing a TV director could have done this movie, you know. There was nothing fancy.
Interesting.
I just say meh. It's not bad.
Okay.
Secondly, I watched rewatched Chronicle.
Yeah, the 2012 film, directed by Josh Trank. Three high school friends gain superpowers after making an incredible discovery. Soon, they find their lives spinning out of control and their bond tested as they embrace their darker sides.
We've all seen it.
Yep.
Yeah. We all liked it.
Yes, I did.
I knew leaving the theater that I loved it, and it's one of my favorite movies so far from this year. It came out in January, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I knew leaving the theater that it was going to be like a first day. As soon as it was released, I was going to buy it first day. Picked it up yesterday on Blu-ray. I remember hearing from the commercials that there was going to be a director's cut.
Uh-huh.
You know, some scenes that were cut out of the theatrical version. So yesterday I watched the theatrical version. I mean, I'm sorry, the director's cut. And honestly, I think the theatrical version is a tighter film. I mean, the stuff they cut out is not important to the film at all.
About how many extra minutes are there?
Total, I noticed three scenes that I didn't remember from the movie. There was an extended cut of when they're in the diner the first time, where he stabs the one kid in the hand with a fork.
Yes.
There's an extended cut of that scene. There's a scene that I think was completely cut out of the movie where he goes and visits that blonde-haired girl, the blogger.
Yes.
He goes to her house, and I think he spends the night because he wakes up the next morning.
Yeah, they show that in the commercials, the brief glimpse of her in her underwear. And I remember seeing that in the previews for the movie in January.
Yep.
But I remember coming out of the movie like, oh, yeah, wait a minute. They didn't show that scene.
Honestly, it's probably 5 seconds longer than the scene you see in the commercial. And then there's, I think, another a totally different restaurant scene. They're eating at another diner. And there's two special effects shots. That was probably the one that I'm surprised they cut, because they actually used some, I think, okay-looking special effects in it. I don't want to spoil it for you guys, but or anybody listening, but I thought that one was the one scene that I was, the only one that made a slight difference. The other two were totally, you know, disposable. I still love the movie, though. Watching it the second time, you could definitely see the 3D is not completely there. The CGI is not CGI is not completely there, especially in the beginning. Like, I think we all noticed, like, the baseball didn't look quite that good.
Right.
Yeah. When they're, you know, it's frozen in the air and
limited budget.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like the movie got better as it went along. Like the CG started off kind of shaky, and I was like, oh no.
Well, I think that it's a tribute to the writing and the acting. It really immerses you in it, and you're not as aware of it.
That's actually my second point. I didn't notice it, but I mean, the writing is actually there is some bad dialogue. Not completely throughout the entire movie, but there are
Well,
some
yeah, it follows some common tropes, I think.
like there's one line where the guy screams it, and it's supposed to be like a really dramatic moment. He's like, "I'm stronger than you," and it's just like it sounds kind of cheesy, especially with the dialogue that preceding it was a little better. Then they say a line like that, it kind of makes it
Yeah.
seem a little cheap. But I mean, I still love the movie. I think I liked it better the first time. I definitely prefer the theatrical version. I'd recommend that one over the
Are
other
you
one.
able to watch the theatrical version on the Blu-ray?
Yes, before it even gets you to the menu options, it asks you if you want to watch the
That's good.
director's cut or the theatrical. So, I think the theatrical is actually a tighter film. I'd recommend that one. And this movie's a yay all the way for me.
$12 million budget. Pretty good for 12 million bucks,
I
huh?
actually thought it
Jeez.
was more than that. I thought it was like around 25. Maybe that was with all the
Yeah.
advertising and all
Oh,
that.
probably. Yeah. Wally, when you saw it, did you like it just as much?
When I first saw it, it was one of those movies I had was a slow burn on me. Like, I liked it, and then I was like, well, I wonder how much I do like this movie. I got a kick out of it.
Kind of let it simmer.
And then it kind of simmered as it's gone on. I was like, I'm actually going to go pick it up probably sometime this weekend
Yeah.
because I want it. Because I went back and I watched Akira shortly after I saw the movie on my
Oh,
birthday.
yeah. I remember you
And
saying the comparisons.
went, you know what? I think Chronicle is essentially a live action Akira
You've
for
never
me.
seen Akira, Tim?
No, I started watching it a number of years ago. I probably got about 15 minutes in, and I was so bored.
It's right over there if you want to
It's
borrow it.
really Akira's really good, and
Yeah.
this is a really it's basically somebody adapted Akira for like live action, and I was
It's
really
probably the
happy.
closest we'll ever get since
Yeah.
the
Well,
actual
you
Akira.
don't think Keanu Reeves is gonna do a good job?
I will be happy with just this.
Yeah, I would. I mean, for anybody that's ever is a huge fan of Akira, if you haven't seen Chronicle, it's actually a good reason to watch Chronicle because Akira is awesome, and Chronicle does, I think, pays a little tribute to Akira.
The director, Josh Trank, I think I heard that he was assigned on to write the Fantastic Four reboot.
That'd be interesting.
So, I mean, he seemed to put a capable movie in front of us with Chronicle, you know,
Yeah.
that first movie.
I'll be interested to see what he does with Fantastic Four. Can't go
Yeah.
any, can't do any worse than, the first two Fantastic
That's
Four movies.
probably
True.
true.
How about you, Tim?
Those two movies are all you wanted
Yep, that
to
was it for
mention?
me.
For me, okay, I got to see The Getaway from 1972, stars Steve McQueen and Ally McGraw, and is directed by Sam Peckinpah. A recently released ex-con and his loyal wife go on the run after a heist goes awry. And that's pretty much what it is. I think there's a reputation with this film as it being, a classic Steve McQueen. He's a real badass. And he is kind of a badass in this movie. He's more, I don't know, it being directed by Sam Peckinpah, it has a lot of Western tropes, and it really is more of a modern day Western than anything else. And like I said, who better than him to direct something like that? Although I have to say that it's kind of a confusing storyline. You don't know really what the stakes are, what the bad guy's motivations are, and I guess in a way that's kind of intentional, but I just didn't think it was well executed. But there are, I think there's really only two great sequences in the movie. One that involves a foot chase on a train, because somebody steals his briefcase full of money, and that's what he's trying, him and Ally McGraw are trying to get away with. And the other being, there's an amazing gunfight in a hotel that is very reminiscent of any Western, especially from that era. From 1972, you're coming off of the Man with No Name movies with Clint Eastwood and any other kind of Western that was trying to, follow through with those type of movies. But I don't know. It's surprising that it's so dull, considering that the screenplay was written by Walter Hill, who wrote screenplays for 48 Hours and Aliens. Although it was, in an earlier part of his career, so maybe he was just getting started. Maybe he was just trying to find his way. But it also makes me think that there may have been a lot of changes after he wrote it, maybe by Peckinpah and Steve McQueen, pretty big names at the time. Walter Hill also wrote the screenplay for the 1994 remake starring Alec Baldwin and Kim Basinger. Little trivia there.
Yeah.
Anyways, overall, I give it a meh. I don't think you need to go out of your way to see it. But yeah. What else did I see? I think that's it, actually. I think that's all I want to talk about. All
right.
So I guess we should just get right into it about Tell No One.
All right.
All right. Released in France in 2006, directed by Guillaume Canet, starring Francois Cluzet, Marie-José Crozet, and Kristen Scott Thomas.
That was her. Like, I honestly thought, man, this girl looks a lot like Kristen Scott Thomas, but I wasn't sure if it was her or not.
Yeah, I didn't
bother to check afterwards.
The plot synopsis goes like this. 8 years ago, pediatrician Alexander Beck was the prime suspect in his wife's murder. He's put all that behind him, but now the two dead bodies have been found near his home. He's suspected of wrongdoing once again. Tell No One is adapted from a thriller novel by American writer Harlan Coben, which was published in 2001. Any of you familiar with any of his books?
No, I know the name, but I don't ever read anything by him.
Yeah, I read a book by him a number of years ago, and it was okay. It was pulp. Anyways, it is considered a hit in France. It generated about $17 million in ticket sales during its first 4 weeks. Okay, what do you think, Wally? First impressions.
I think my first impression was that lead actor looks a hell of a lot like
Dustin Hoffman. Yes,
that's all I could see. Like for most of them, like wow, Dustin Hoffman. This dude looks just like him.
He could have a doppelganger.
Exactly, and I was like, you know, if they remade this movie like years ago, you know, I mean, they could have easily thrown him in, and he's got that kind of sensibility about him.
Yeah,
that I could easily see like that kind of like
the nervous look in his eyes.
Nervous look in his eyes, but he's trying to figure it all out.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
The movie overall. I'll nitpick later.
Okay.
When it comes to what I had problems with. I mean, and there's silly things you know, but
yeah.
Stuff that just kind of irked me while watching the movie, but I mean it's a basic thriller/mystery.
Okay.
This doesn't really bring anything new to the genre or nothing, you know, terribly shocking or surprising.
Hermano.
All right, before I get into what I thought, I need backstory about how this movie got chosen.
You need backstory.
Like, was it? Did you hear that it was a great movie? Like, who picked this? Was kind of you.
I
right?
think I had been leading the way as to see it.
I think you nominated it, and then I seconded it because I had seen it in a trailer.
Right, and I had heard Harlan Coben on the radio once being interviewed and saying that the people who were interviewing him said that. They had seen the movie that was adapted from the book that they really liked, and that they thought the movie was good, and that it was a hit overseas. Then I read up a little bit more and heard more positive things. And honestly, I remembered looking at the Rotten Tomatoes score, 93%, and among critics, and 86% from viewers.
Wow.
It is a universal hit, you know. And I got more and more curious. So, yeah, I guess I was the one that kind of led the way as to say.
I just wanted, because going into this movie, I knew literally nothing. I'd never seen a trailer.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know the synopsis. All I knew was that one of you guys recommended it. That's literally it. And going into it with no expectations, I'm kind of with Wally. I just thought it was okay.
Uh-huh.
For me, it was kind of half Fugitive, half Girl with a Dragon Tattoo.
Okay.
That's the two movies that I found like this movie was like a combination of. I thought it was well acted. I thought maybe a little long. It felt like, especially in the beginning, like the first hour of this movie is really slow.
Yeah, I agree. It's a bit too long. I think about 20 minutes could have been cut out of this movie.
I feel like a lot more than 20 minutes could have been cut.
2 hours long, it could easily cut it down to like an hour and a half.
Yeah, this movie, if you cut it down to about an hour and a half, hour, 40 minutes, it's a lot tighter. There was a lot of scenes in this movie that were really like, why is this scene in here? All the stuff with his lawyer.
Yes.
You literally could have cut out every scene with the lawyer. Totally inconsequential to anything that happened with him.
Well, which lawyer?
Both.
Oh, both lawyers.
Well, the other sleazy lawyer, I guess.
I think that would have been added. I think if they just stuck with the sleazy lawyer, it would have been more interesting.
Yeah, like the other lawyer, his high, because he's a doctor, so he has like a high price lawyer. that he, you know, he deals with. And like, I honestly don't know why she was even in this movie. Like, there was really nothing to her. I didn't care. I'm trying to think of this so much. Like, I think they try to build up a relationship, like, with the husband and the wife, and like, kind of like, the way the movie starts is you get introduced to the husband. His wife is still alive. Then, you know, mysterious circumstances, she ends up getting killed. I don't know. I feel like they really were trying to get you to care about the husband and the wife, but throughout the entire movie, I honestly did not care about literally any character in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, by the end of the movie, I don't care, like, how it's resolved. Like, I just didn't care. I had no feelings whatsoever.
You're right. I think that there's actually nothing technically wrong with this movie. The acting is fine. The directing, the camera work. Well, actually, there is one thing that I think was wrong, that was bad about this movie. But overall, there's not much wrong with this movie. It's a solidly made movie. Technically well-made movie. One thing that I thought was bad was the score or the song choices. I thought the song choices were awful. I thought they didn't fit at all.
And they came out in left field.
They didn't make any sense to me. And especially considering that they're all American songs or sung in English.
They stick out a lot more when you're watching a subtitled film and then you hear American songs in their native language.
Jeff Buckley and U2. Yeah. It was weird. It makes me wonder if the songs were changed for the overseas market. And if they were different in the original French release.
I don't think so, especially the U2 song. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was about to bring up the U2 song that Hermano was going to reference. Because you clearly see a login screen based off of that song.
Yeah.
Like, it's a part of a certain revelation he makes in the movie. Like, it's like a password.
And it didn't connect very well.
Username combo. And it ties into U2. I don't want to spoil it right now.
Yeah.
But I mean, that one, at least for the most part, was probably originally in the movie.
Yeah, but how he makes that connection and how that
Yeah, you don't even see how he makes it. He's just sitting there with his dog, and then all of a sudden he's like, you stupid son of a bitch.
It's pretty much like you see this like light bulb go on over his head. You don't really see it, but you're like, Eureka!
Yeah.
I'll mention this again in spoilers. It happens at another key time in the movie, another key incident that happens at the same time that they cut away from one and bring it to the other. I'm like, wait a minute.
There's a lot of things I want to mention in spoilers.
Yeah, let's start with the positive stuff. You know, there was some really good camera work, especially during that foot chase from his office through the highway.
Oh, that was cool.
That was really good. You know, there was one scene where they had the camera attached to him so you could see it. It's just one shot of him going down the stairs. Added a lot to that scene. And then when he's on the highway itself, I don't know how they must have filmed that. They must have digitally put him in afterwards or whatever.
Because I felt like that scene was potentially green screen. Like
I thought it was well done.
It looked good. It didn't look bad, but I mean, it wasn't like, you know.
Yeah, but that whole chase was really, really well done. And then when he's hiding in the dumpster and looking on his phone for the phone number, you know, they did tie in a lot of the elements that they brought earlier on in the movie. You know, they tied it well into what happened later on in the movie, like when he calls his Bruno, with his friend. I don't know. It was odd.
For me, it was like when I compare it to The Fugitive and Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, I don't think it's as a good movie as The Fugitive. And I also don't think it's as dark or gritty as The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
You know what it reminded me of was the movie Frantic. You ever see that? The 1988 Roman Polanski movie with Harrison Ford?
Remind me, what's the...
In a hotel room in Paris, the doctor comes out of the shower and finds that his wife has disappeared. He soon finds himself caught up in a world of intrigue, espionage, gangsters, drugs, and murder.
I feel like I've seen that.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really well done. It just has a similar theme of a man trying to prove his innocence and find his wife. You know?
I felt it was really tame. Like I kind of got like they were trying to. I don't know which one came first, Girl Dragon Tattoo or this.
I think movie. Oh.
The books.
Oh, the books?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I don't remember when. This movie was released in 2006, so the books came earlier, yeah.
Okay, so I just felt like, I don't know, it just never quite got, like, dark or gritty or, you know, I don't know. I just felt it was really tame.
And I think that might have had something to do with how long it was and how many extra scenes there were in, because there were the scenes of the henchmen, like that woman who knew the right pressure points.
Yeah,
of
God,
someone.
Let me start with her.
and if they focused a little bit more on those people, on her and the people that she was with, mm-hmm. I think that they could have added the grittiness that you're talking about.
Now, those are the other characters that I thought were mostly useless, because they're total screen time,
yeah.
These like thugs that are apparently after him, and you don't know why the entire movie until it makes sense at the end. You're like, why are these thugs, these like, you know, these hitmen or whatever after him?
And that makes you think that in the, since it's an adaptation from a book, that they were probably featured more in the book.
Yeah.
And they were probably better suited for the novel than they were for this movie.
I don't know. The movie's 2 hours and 11 minutes, and the
yeah.
first hour is really slow. And I thought the movie really picked up when, at the point of when he jumps out of his,
yes,
his doctor's office or whatever.
Yeah.
And that foot chase starts.
Mm-hmm.
From that point on, I liked the movie quite a bit.
Right.
I thought it was really tight. The pacing was fine, but the beginning just kills this movie. It's too. They spent way too much time in the first hour trying to establish characters and stuff.
Yeah.
Characters that you would never. I mean, for me at least, inevitably, I didn't give a crap about. And they spent all that time. You still don't give a crap.
Yeah.
Is a problem.
Yeah. Was there anything else you guys wanted to mention before we get into spoilers?
No, I'm afraid if I say anything, it'll tie into a spoiler, so I'll wait.
I'm good. Well, we can probably just get right into spoilers.
Spoilers it is.
Alright, so spoilers. Okay.
Alright. You know, there were some common tropes that I found. This, like, the police have the evidence tying him to the murders, but there's only one cop who knows better. You know, there's that one cop who thinks, wait a minute, maybe we're not on the right track.
And where's that cop?
He's
from?
Also from the Transporter, doing the same role.
Really?
Same
that
guy.
Was him.
The same guy.
Oh,
he's,
I didn't recognize
that
him.
The
Transporter is the same guy. He's the one that realizes that, you know, Jason Statham's innocent in the Transporter.
Doesn't he have,
like,
a goatee in the Transporter?
He does.
Oh,
yeah.
That's probably why
and
I didn't recognize
he's,
him.
He's, you know, sneaking around the in the United States or whatever, where he's like sneaking around like on their computer system in like the second movie looking for information for him.
Mm-hmm.
Same, you know, same character. I mean, I wonder if this is like, that's like his deal over in France.
Yeah.
That particular actor. I can't think of his name.
And going along that, you know, the main character himself, the guy who looks like Dustin Hoffman, he's a very passive player in his own story.
He doesn't do much.
Yeah, he doesn't do anything to prove his own innocence. You know, the cops, all the cops do the real work to find everything out. It's just, he just keeps running. That's all he does is run. I don't know. And when the actual truth is revealed, the bad guy spills the beans on every little detail, just like every other, any Bond movie, you know?
Yeah.
Where the Bond villain will talk about...
I'm going to build this laser and a satellite that's going to blow up the entire United States. Unfortunately, it's not quite completed yet, but you just arrived in time to watch it be finished.
Exactly. Well, you have more stuff to mention.
I hate loose ends in movies.
Okay.
And to me, there's a glaring loose end was that the other operative with the goatee, the kind of, he's got a darker goatee in the beginning and it's kind of grayish. He leaves the van right before Bruno shows up.
Yeah.
And there's that small battle. You never see him again in the movie.
Yeah.
There's no need for him to be there.
Yeah.
Then there's also the annoyance of that tall woman that likes to do the pressure point stuff.
Yeah.
But she's wearing gloves on a point where you have to actually apply a certain amount of pressure to be able to use a pressure point that would leave bruising.
Yep.
If she's causing the kind of excruciating agony that she's causing on somebody.
Yeah.
And it's just like, all right, so why even bother wearing gloves? I mean, they're going to see that somebody was actually, you know, doing something to this, you know, to this body, you know, before death. And even then when you first see her, like even her like fight scenes aren't even like well choreographed. She just kind of shows up in just like this really weird, oddly shot like kidney punch.
Yeah.
And then you know the girl being dragged off and whatnot.
And the other thing is she's not like this big like China from wrestling like woman. She's like very thin, and she at one point I think she punches him in the chest.
Yeah.
And he reacts like, "Holy shit! I just got hit by a train!" Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm like, really? Like,
then,
I don't know.
And then she takes what, 2 or 3 bullets to go down finally. But she gets shot twice, and then she like kind of goes for a walk.
Well, I thought that was kind of a realistic take on someone getting shot. You know, it wasn't over the top, super actiony, super. stylized or anything like that. I thought it was pretty legitimate.
Yeah, but the first guy goes down from not even like the same kind of wound. He drops in a like in a second.
Yeah, well, where was he shot?
He's shot in the lower ribs, just below his heart.
Well,
and then she's shot in the back, you know, right between the shoulder blades twice.
Well, and no, she shot in the kidney area and then
the
shoulder blade.
Yeah, and then she kind of just leaves.
Yeah.
If I see somebody take two shots like that, I'm shooting him in the head the third time. I'm not hesitating like Bruno did. No, I'm gonna stop this real quick. That could be a robot.
I kind of felt bad for Bruno, you know, having to leave his son.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of like weird, like ancillary characters that like didn't really need to like be there.
Yeah,
I like Bruno's henchmen. They were kind of cool, like how they like distracted the poop by throwing the TV out the window.
That's one scene that was when I don't even remember. Oh, Alexander was with Bruno and his main guy, and to find out the truth from if his wife was sleeping with somebody, and
yep.
And there was some great camera work of leaving him with the guy, leaving Alexander with the guy who he thought was sleeping with his wife.
Discussing
and,
something in the background. While
right, and the camera follows them back to the car, and it's just showing Bruno and his friend talking in the car with the other guys, Alexander, in the background. And yeah, that shot of them just talking, discussing, and you can see something kind of escalating in the background, and then all of a sudden they break out into a fight. Alexander breaks out into a fight with the guy. That was really well done. That was really well shot, you know?
Yeah.
It just adds to, like what I said, there's nothing technically wrong with this movie. It's just a little overdone.
Yeah, and...
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say that I thought it was filmed. Like you said, there were some nice, really nice-looking shots. I thought one of the nicer looking shots is a really like nothing you know crazy was happening. There would I think it's towards the beginning of the movie where him and his wife are driving to that lake,
mm-hmm.
and the camera's just like swooping around the car and it's going in the car, and then it's coming back out mm-hmm. and going over the car, and then they get to the point where I guess it's like this dirt road and there's a chain,
yep.
and just as if they're about to park in front of it, the camera like goes from his side of the car, goes all the way around it and swoops into her side of the car. I thought it was just—it's shot really nice, and there's a lot of like nice crane shots, like
yeah.
establishing shots and stuff like that. It looked really good. It just—it had a lot of like typical thriller movie
tropes.
I guess they're tropes, like where, like I guess from the point where his wife is presumably killed
mm.
to present day, has 8 years has passed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when he starts investigating, all of a sudden, all these people start coming forward like, hey, I've been holding this secret for 8 years. I just never told you.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on,
yeah.
man. Like, that's, like, he didn't even have to beat it out of them. Like, they literally just come right on and be like, oh, I did see her all covered in bruises.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm the one that took pictures of her when she was all covered in bruises.
Yeah.
I'm just like, these are people close to him.
Right.
Like, his photographer friends.
Yep. His sister.
His own sister.
Yeah.
Who's married to a photographer?
Like, your wife may have been cheating on you with this dude.
Yeah.
I'm like, are you freaking serious?
Yeah.
Like, 8 years, this guy's been tormented and, like, thinking his wife is dead. And
yeah.
and I hate stuff like that. It's, like, it's too convenient, too... I think it's lazy. It's very, very lazy.
It is very
Well, it's, like, the same thing with the operatives. Like, they don't show up until after he gets the video of seeing his wife at the train station.
Uh-huh.
Where she, like, looks
yeah.
directly at a closed-circuit camera. And apparently she's skilled enough that she can send him... She can get the CCTV footage and email it to him.
Yeah, they show...
never explain that. Like, is she, like, a super hacker or something?
Exactly. That was a loose end. They show the people hacking in and following his email progress and his phones.
Yeah,
and
they know
and
she's
they never
alive.
Really pay off on that, do they?
Well, it's because they know that she's alive and they've been sent by the ultimate bad guy who you
well, they
only
don't
see
really know, right?
Like
they
three
think
times.
She is?
No, they know that she is because basically they say later, like, I didn't think she was going to set up a meeting. And they're looking for her at the park when she's supposed to meet up with them.
But do you feel like they've been looking for her for 8 years? Or they just recently found out that she
they
may
only
be alive?
They also recently found out that she may be alive. But again, that also implies that they've been tailing him and reading his emails for how long now?
Yeah.
You know?
You know, it kind of makes me wonder, her father, who ultimately is the one that made her go away, and is a retired cop, is the one that spills the beans to Alexander about all of this at the end of the movie.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. But he never explicitly says that she is still alive, that she is returning, has returned, and his henchmen, his guys or whatever, the people he hired, were looking for her. You know, and it kind of made me wonder, was she still being alive in these emails and stuff, was that kind of in Alexander's head? Was that made up?
No, I don't think it was, because the father mentions, like, her father mentions in that last scene when he's talking to Alexander, and he's like, where did she go after you see, like, the whole, like, how he contrived the plan to, like, he paid these two guys to abduct her, and then he turns on them and kills them both before they can do anything else to her.
Right.
And then he tells her that he's dead, so that she doesn't come looking for him.
Right.
And then he says he sent her to Madrid, but I'm not sure if she stayed there.
Exactly. Exactly. But they never pay off as if anybody really knew that she was back, or if, because when they're in the playground in the park waiting for her, you know, with all the walkie talkies, they're kind of surrounding the park. Do they know what exactly she looks like?
They don't. They have. No. They think they know what she looks like, because the woman with the carriage.
Yeah.
Is they think that's her, and then they send the tall, weird, linky lady after her.
And how do they know that she was going to be in the park meeting Alexander?
Because they read his. They hacked into his email, and they saw the.
And that's what makes
the thing
me wonder.
Where it says, like,
the only
meet me at the
people,
park at this time. I love you.
The only person who has any contact with her is him, is Alexander.
Yep, but they're hacked into both of his work email and his work computer and his home computer.
So it's not possible that he did this himself.
No, they would
unknowingly.
Yeah, I don't think they would have done that, because you see her at the park actually looking at him, and then she sees the tail, and then she's like, I'm out of here.
But was that made up in his mind? Was that imagined in his mind? Maybe I'm just looking for something that it really
isn't
there.
Deeper, yeah. I think
I don't think it is. I don't think it's imagined either, because he would have to imagine her coming in and seeing him through the merry-go-round.
Because at the end of the movie, when she comes up behind him at the tree, he never really reacts to her touch. You know, he never really fully turns around. And that's made me wonder if even that scene, if that played out in his mind.
See, I don't think it did. I don't think it did. I don't think it's one of those kind of movies like, you know, like when I was like, oh, I woke up and, you know, or he was like, you know, crazy and imagine the whole thing, because I mean, the thing that causes him to break down at the end is when he sees all the cuts in the tree every year they go together, that she's been coming back year after year to make a mark in the tree, because he does turn to face her then, because they kiss.
Yes.
He kisses her at the very end, and then the camera pans up and looks toward the
The whole flashbacks with them as children was kind of forced.
That was weird. Because, like, little kids don't kiss like
that,
as far as I can remember.
They were, what, 8 years old?
8 years old, and they're kissing like adults. I'm like, that's odd. Yeah. I don't think little kids ever... I don't recall any little kid I know ever, like, you know...
What do you mean? I used to kiss like that all the time with all the girls. Shit. No, I'm not kidding.
You're not kidding?
I'm not kidding. That was smooth. My actual favorite scene was the end. It's another one of those movies. I don't know. It's been a trend lately. Like, movies that will be kind of meh throughout, and then something will happen at the end, and I'm like, all right, picked up the rest of the movie a little bit. So the scene where Alexander, the main character, Dustin Hoffman, goes to confront his wife's father.
Yes.
That whole scene where he's wearing a wire, the mm-hmm. police are in on it, they are on his side, they realize he's not guilty anymore.
Yes, yes.
His father starts telling him a story, and it kind of cuts to the police perspective from how, you know, what they're listening to, and all of a sudden, what they're listening to, he starts getting scratchy, and they can't understand what's going on. They're trying to figure out if their equipment is working correctly. They're like, everything's good on this end, we don't know where that noise is coming from. Then it cuts back to them, and the father is telling them the story. And it's telling it, as he's telling it, it's kind of the scenes are playing out, like what happened.
Filling in the blanks.
Filling in the blanks through his story. Yeah. Like, pretty much everything he's saying is actually happening. And then it cuts back. You think that's the ending, but then it's kind of like a little mini false ending. Cuts back, and it cuts back to what's actually happening with all that static noise. And he was pretty much telling Alexander that he realizes that the cops are listening. And that story that you just heard and you just seen played out was actually fake. And what actually happened was that the wife actually did kill that guy. Not the father. Like, the original story is that the father killed this guy that was raping children
mm-hmm.
at a horse farm or something that she volunteered at or whatever.
Yep.
And then when it cuts back, and the actual story is that she killed him
mm-hmm.
and that the guy that she kills, the guy that was raping the kids...
Owns the stable. He's a governor.
His father owns the stable, and his father is the one that's hired all these henchmen to go after, or to watch Alexander, to try to get this woman, because he knows that she's the one that killed his son.
Yes.
So I mean, I like that whole, the way that played out, the way that, you know, he turns up like a TV, like really loud, and it's really staticky. It's like
it was played out very well.
I thought that was probably the best film scene in the entire movie. I wish like an hour had been cut off this movie. I think it would have been a lot.
An hour now. We're going for 20 then, minutes.
Honestly, like, no, you guys said 20 minutes. I said the whole first hour could almost be gone. And if this movie was about an hour and a half, it'd be a lot tighter. I think it would have been a lot more enjoyable.
So that's about 40 minutes.
And then there's the other thing, too, about, like, they never mentioned anything about Alex's father being dead. I mean, it's assumed that he's dead because you never hear him mentioned in the movie until the very end. Like, your father's death was no accident. A boogie doo what?
Yeah.
That came out of left field, too.
I don't remember that being critical to the story.
It wasn't.
I think I remember it mentioned briefly once, like when he first goes visits the father, her father or something. I thought he mentioned something like about his father being dead, but not like the circumstances behind it, just that he was dead. But you don't know that, oh, he was killed in a hunting accident, and that it was really no accident.
Yeah.
Because his father had witnessed
a molestation
from that guy, and the owner of the horse ranch puts a hit out on him, and
that weird operative guy shows up again.
Yes.
Jeez. I'm going through the Rotten Tomatoes review synopsis, and the credit that's given to this movie is amazing. Like I said, 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, sure, as we've said, it's a technically well-made movie, but there's nothing that stands out.
Yes,
it's amazing.
It's been 6 years. I mean, maybe 6 years ago, this movie would have been a lot more amazing, but I think, I mean, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoos happened. There's been a lot of better thrillers.
A French language fugitive with wind sprint intensity and immediacy?
Nope.
No.
Hitchcock would have liked seeing him squirm?
Nope.
What the hell is going on here?
I don't think so.
Tell No One has shades of Hitchcock's Vertigo, and not to its detriment, an extremely gripping and fascinating suspense film. That's from Craig Phillips at Green Cine.
Nope.
Wow. I don't get it.
Even mentioning Hitchcock anywhere near this film
is blasphemy.
It's kind of sacrilege.
Yeah, it's not. It's not even close.
You had said, Hermano, that you got kind of vibes of The Fugitive. I guess so. Like I said,
doctor on the run from
of killing his wife. Right, I mean, that's exactly really it. Like, there was nothing.
It wasn't me. It was a tall, lanky woman.
Yeah, he's like, no, you know, he's con. You know, it's very similar. I mean, you know, it's a doctor. He's, you know, accused of killing his wife. He's on the run. He's kind of doing shady things to clear his name. In that way, that's the only way I would compare it to The Fugitive. Yeah. I mean, I think we could do a re-edit
of this movie, don't you think?
That'd be easy.
Oh, that's so easy.
Yeah.
First hour gone. Done.
So for the 48-hour film project, we'll compress the entire movie to 7 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know if I have much more to add to this because it's such an average movie.
It's very, I don't know what else to say. It's okay. I'd recommend it, but I mean, I'd recommend it to very select people.
All right, then I guess we can get to the ratings portion.
Well, actually, there is a tentative schedule for a remake, possibly in 2014. Any interest?
No.
Well, I mean, the original. I could see a remake being made, like we said, more concise.
Honestly,
but then what is it going to add to film? You know,
look what
the story's been told already many times.
Look what happened with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo remake.
Yeah, yeah.
The original I thought was good. We watched the remake.
It's not as good.
It didn't add anything. It was the exact same story. I mean, it was. It looked nicer, but that was pretty much it.
Yeah. Okay, Wally, grade.
I'd give it a B.
Hermano.
Yeah, a B.
I'd give it a C+. Ooh. B- average?
B- average.
B-.
Okay, B- for Tell No One.
Yeah, it's worth seeing if you want to see, you know.
If it's in your instant queue and you got nothing else to watch.
Watch it.
And you don't mind subtitles and you don't mind the French language.
Yeah, you got 2 hours to kill, you know.
All right. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. You can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com. Please, any emails are great. Email us with any kind of topic that you would like us to talk about.
Or movie recommendations. We'll take those, too.
Or how much you hate us.
That, too. Any publicity is good publicity. And you can also follow us on Twitter at 1STTimeWatchers at twitter.com.
Please download our episodes on iTunes. Feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. Stay tuned for our next podcast. Do we know what we're going to be talking about?
No, we don't.
Well, what are our choices? Do we have choices?
Well, I know Hermano had a couple of options that he wanted to suggest.
I'm getting Shame in the mail tomorrow.
I don't know if that's a movie we want to watch together.
No, we can watch Shame together. Why the hell not? Yeah. It's I hear it's excellent.
Apparently, Tim's a little shy.
Other options?
Fish Tank. Tyrannosaur.
Tyrannosaur. Now we're talking.
Have you heard of it?
Nope. It sounds like something I might watch.
Oh man, you're gonna be so disappointed if you think it's anything about dinosaurs.
Damn it.
But yeah, those are my three.
Tyrannosaur, a man plagued by violence and rage that is driving himself to self-destruction. There is a chance of redemption that appears in the form of a Christian charity shop worker.
What does that have to do with dinosaurs?
Oh, what was the other one? Fish Tank?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember this movie. It has Michael Fassbender in it.
Is there?
Everything changes for 15-year-old Mia when her mom brings home a new boyfriend.
I'm still going to go with Shame. I think we should watch that.
Okay.
There we go. Well,
dude, did you see Hunger? We all liked Hunger, right?
I've not seen Hunger yet.
I've seen Hunger.
Hunger is so good, it's on Instant Queue.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't have to see Hunger. Sorry.
That was Steve McQueen's other,
yes.
Only other movie, right?
And that's exactly why I want to see Shame, because I loved Hunger.
I did like Hunger.
I thought
Hunger
the direction
as well.
Was amazing.
So our next movie will be Shame.
All right. Shame.
First time watchers podcast, because we love to watch.
We're trying to figure out ways for you to be forced to watch The Social Network.
That ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, but we're trying to find ways to watch it, to make you watch it.
Like make it a game or a bet or something. Well,
we have to.
You wouldn't even watch it on a bet.
I refuse to watch that movie.
You have to watch this movie.
But you have to honor a bet.
You do have to honor.
I don't honor your honor as a man.
I don't have to take the bet. A bet requires two people.
But what if it's like something that challenges your very manliness?
No, it doesn't got shame about it. No, I'm not watching that movie.
You have to watch it somehow.
I don't have to watch it.
For the record, what is the reason that you refuse to watch it?
Because it's a movie about Facebook, and I refuse to watch a movie that's about something that's in the vernacular.
As in capitalizing on the popular?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, put it this way. Facebook. When that movie came out, Facebook is at the peak of its popularity. What's coming up now? Pinterest and... what's the other one? Instagram.
Do you think there's going to be a movie about Instagram or Twitter?
No, but I mean, you show me I want to see a MySpace. I want to see a MySpace movie first before I watch a Facebook movie. You guys can make that happen.
It's probably because the story behind that is not as interesting.
I don't think that the movie is more than just about Facebook. I think
I don't care about Mark Zuckerberg.
The
I don't care
about
the story.
It's interesting. Yeah. It's a well-made movie.
Something I could care less about.
It's a well-made movie.
Dude, the one part in that trailer that made me just completely, I was like, I will never watch this movie. At least for a decade.
Is the
way it's cut. It's probably not like that in the actual movie itself. But the part where he's talking to the Asian chick, he goes, "You invented Facebook," and then it cuts to them making out in a bathroom. Fuck that. Fuck. That.
Yeah, I don't think that really happened.
No, it did happen.
Oh, did it?
Well, I don't think in the trailer it happened, but
yeah,
that's not
I
how
mean,
it
Yeah,
it
I figured as much, but that was enough. You completely took me out of ever wanting to see that movie anytime soon with just that one scene.
Why so offended?
It's just a whole trendy, like, oh, it's Facebook, let's make some money. Let's make a movie about the big social thing that's going on now. People want to call it that.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
But, I don't know. I think Tim's probably a bigger fan than I am. I'm not trying to force you to watch it, but I mean, I think it's you definitely have a different idea in your head of what this movie is.
I don't care. I'm rarely on Facebook. I only pop on periodically to make jokes or to see what's going on as far as like comedy gigs goes, or basically if I'm bored at night at the newspaper and I have nothing else better to do with my time, then I'll hop on Facebook. Other than that, I could give a rat's ass about Facebook.
But are there any other movies or documentaries that you saw that did interest you, that you thought was a good movie, even though the actual topic or subject or company or whatever didn't interest you?
I counter with a question. Why would I watch a documentary about a subject that did not interest me?
What if I watch people? You say you never watch a movie that you had no interest in, but everyone just keeps saying how awesome it is. You won't watch it even if you're not interested in it.
I can't think of the last time I did something like that.